Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Welcome to Alpha Talks Editor's Roundtable. What moved the markets this week? The week ending Friday, April 30, the last week of April. The year is rolling along here. A week where we had a number of positive reports on the economy, an accommodative Fed who continues to say that they will tolerate inflation and not touch any type of tapering or any type of tightening, and earnings that many big companies, Amazon and Apple among them, beat estimates by substantial margins. However, we look at the risk assets at stocks from where they were a week ago, and we are pretty much exactly where we were. Not very much going on there. So I am curious what this is all about. And to help me discuss it, I will be talking with my colleagues here from Seeking Alpha, and I will introduce them right now. In no particular order, Brad Olison, VP of News, Kim Kahn, Senior News Editor, Stephen Alpher, Managing Editor of Breaking News, the whole thing moderated and hosted by me, Nathaniel E. Baker, Senior Editor of Strategic Contributors here at Seeking Alpha. All right, let's start off with Kim, like we usually do, to give us the lay of the land and the big picture overview of what moved markets or didn't this week.
Well, it's hard to think of what more the bulls could have wanted out of this week. And you had, as you said, you had three mega caps with earnings just knocking it out of the park. You have good economic data, a really impressive Chicago PMI, and GDP, while a little lighter than maybe expected, still strong comeback, looking to peak in Q2. And I mean, the GDP number is very tilted towards goods, so there's a lot of room for a services rebound to boost U.S. economic growth. There's the Fed saying it's still not thinking about tapering. There's another more details of a Biden infrastructure plan. And you've got yields, higher this week, still in check and well off their recent highs on the 10-year. So I'm thinking that the market, looking at the S&P, could still finish easily negative for the week. It begs the question of what the market really needs to get to this next leg higher. It seems a bit like Spalding and Caddyshack to me. I just keep wanting more. I want a hamburger. No, a cheeseburger. I want an Amazon stock split. These earnings are really impressive and on a very good backdrop. And, these bids just start and then fall back again.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, the market is a forward-looking mechanism, as we all know. So maybe it's already looking ahead to second quarter, third quarter, and just does not think that these numbers are sustainable. Who knows? But we do have winners and losers, as we do every week. I suspect that this week those are divided along earnings, but Bradley Olison can tell us more about that now.
You'd be right there, Matt. It was definitely an earnings-driven week. On the winner's side, you had energy-related names. They also reported, Hess, National Oil Well, or NOV Inc., as is known now. Blowout earnings there, citing oil prices. You have demand on the oil. That's part of that reflation trend that we've seen as the economy starts to reopen. And another big winner was UPS, which is also a strong economic signal, as Kim was pointing to. If we want to look at the broad big picture on economic data, that's strong. But on the micro level, you have some of these companies really confirming that trend. They were citing freight and logistics there as part of their blowout earnings. But on the losers, I guess, as we've already kind of alluded to, basically the losers are most companies reporting earnings. Though we have more than the majority of the S&P 500 companies that have beaten or met expectations, their performance this week has been flagging. That may be a sign, as you were pointing to, Nat, that this might be all priced in. As we know, the stock market is a forward-looking instrument. And you just look at some of the mega cap earnings, right? Alphabet, that's the Google parent, Apple and Tesla, all those were strong beats this week. Alphabet, for example, 30% revenue growth growth, 160% growth in their net income. That's their profit at $18 billion rather in one quarter. And the only exception in that FANG group that reported this week that's higher are Facebook and Amazon. Those are up 8% and 5% respectively. And you could argue maybe some of that Amazon bid is due to the speculation about the stock split that Kim just pointed to earlier. On the specific side of the losers, you know, we'll go into Tesla. Mostly their forecast was a little less optimistic than the street was expecting, but otherwise a big beat on the top and the bottom line, partially helped by a sale of Bitcoin, believe it or not, and also some of their credits associated with the sale of electric vehicles, and Twitter earnings, which just happened just recently, one of their biggest drops in many, many, many quarters. I think they're down 15%. Just a weaker ad market for them overall. But yes, as you pointed to, all earnings related, but there's an undercurrent here, which is that reflation trade. And so, you know, I think we saw a lot of big analysts pointing to how there's a commodity shortage. And I think we even saw corn follow lumber recently, which is just a sign of things heating up in the underlying economy.
Yeah, and wheat and other soft commodities as well at multi-year highs, some even all-time highs, if I'm not mistaken. Copper too. Stephen, what do you make of all this?
Tons of earnings. I'll just pick one, maybe one that got a little less press, and that's Domino's. It gives me a chance to mention my favorite stock, one of which I do not own, never have owned, unfortunately. But Domino's continues to post big numbers. It's their 40th consecutive quarter of positive comp sales in the U.S. and something like 30 straight years of quarters of positive comp sales for international sales, going back to the 90s, I believe. So they continue to do really well. Operating margins were up. The stock sold off initially, ended up, I think, in the green for the day after they reported. There's some question. They're going to have some tough comps this year because last year was the COVID thing and everybody getting delivery. But management kind of cooled those thoughts. They said they have a lot of firepower that they have not yet used as far as advertising. So they have plenty of money, plenty of levers to pull to boost sales later on this year. So a lot of analysts came away from the call saying, yeah, they're going to be fine with the comps. But I like to drag out my favorite chart once in a while, which is Domino's versus Google. They both came public around the same time in the early 2000s. And you have one company that's one of the most dominant monopolies in history, involved with pretty much everything in everybody's daily lives nowadays. And you have another company that sells barely edible pizza, and Domino's has just far outperformed Google since they both IPO'd. I think Domino's is up about 60-fold from its IPO. So it's really one of my favorite stocks, one of my favorite charts, and I love following it.
That's wild because Google has been quite all right since its IPO too.
Yeah, it's not to say Google's done poorly, but yeah, Domino's killed it.
That's wild. And yeah, Domino's kind of proving that most of the world simply does not have good taste in pizza at all, or maybe most of the world doesn't have access to good pizza. But and then also Domino's does have other products that are a little bit more palatable, such as its chicken wings. Anyway,
yeah, great job.
But also the rest of the world doesn't have access to really powerful internet, right? So Google still has that untapped market. Meanwhile, Domino's can seemingly get that barely edible pizza to anywhere in 45 minutes or less, right?
Yeah, guaranteed, right? Yeah, used to be half an hour. Anyway. All right, let's move on to the segment of the show where we discuss our favorite articles, news coverage, or other items on Seeking Alpha and elsewhere that we have perhaps been involved with or perhaps just seen and noticed. And let's start with Kim.
I'm going to follow up on something that Steve mentioned last week on the companies that are raising prices. We're hearing just a lot more commentary in earnings conference calls about this cost push inflation from rising commodities prices. And, you know, Colgate and Clorox were talking about it today when they reported, and Stanley Black & Decker is raising prices because they're dealing with higher costs, input costs. So, interestingly enough, Credit Suisse was out in a note today where they're really the bullish note. They're boosted their S&P target up to 4,600 from 4,300. And they addressed the commodity inflation question, saying that it's actually going to be good overall for margins because the costs will get passed on to the consumer. So that, you know, that on a consumer inflation you know, view maybe raise a little few red flags there, but should be, it looks like it should be okay for companies. And on the inflation front, I also find it interesting that Jerome Powell this week was talking, taking questions about it, of course. And he's spent, you know, the Fed spent the last few months just, you know, debunking the Phillips curve. But this time around came up and said, well, inflation is going to be transitory because there's so much slack in the labor market. So I guess the Phillips curve is completely debunked if it helps him in the transitory message.
Yeah, so much that was said from the Fed, but not really any deviation from what they said last month. They're sticking to their guns, willing to tolerate inflation, which they view as transitory. No real indication on what the difference is between transitory inflation and other inflation. I suspect it's just inflation, but and the difference is the Fed and how they view it. Anyway, all right, Brad, what about you?
I don't know how I found myself in Stephen's beat on the Bitcoin crypto trail, but one of my favorite articles Kim actually wrote, which was on Goldman Sachs' crypto basket. They found 19 stocks using a variety of methods in a screener, looking at, I think, regression analyses, and they did some analysis on company filings and otherwise to find a basket of stocks that with exposure or some sort of relationship to Bitcoin in some capacity. And they found that all these names outperformed the S&P by almost 30% or more than 30% year to date. There were some interesting choices here. I mean, you don't find household names like IBM and JP Morgan and normally associate them with Bitcoin, although those stocks were among the stocks mentioned in this Goldman basket. And I think it's mostly geared for people who don't have an appetite for some of maybe Bitcoin's volatility, as we saw most recently in the last 2 weeks, dropping 20% in a matter of days and otherwise. And so they're just trying to give access to play this trend if you wanted to in a more traditional way. Other household names I found interesting on that basket were PayPal, MasterCard. I think everyone will understand Overstock. I think that's been a common name that's been batted around. And then there are some more pure plays that I recognized on the list like Riot Blockchain, Marathon Patent, and MicroStrategy, which is an interesting name considering the fact that they, I think, just shifted almost their entire business model to just, I guess, buying Bitcoin. But their market cap is massive now compared to their actual business sales. But this kind of dovetailed into an interesting part of Bitcoin's trading broadly, which is that we're coming into the best month typically for Bitcoin, which is May. And that was just an interesting observation from Nordea and Macrobond, that it's noting that it's historically the best month for May. So theoretically, you could say buy Bitcoin in May, you know, versus the age-old adage for equities, which is to sell in May and go away. And then to build on that, some of the major Wall Street research houses just this week came out with their own version of sell in May, and they instead said buy in May and then go away. They're citing that reflation trade that I mentioned at the top of the program as reasons to stay bullish on the market and to kind of completely disregard all of the accepted or more conventional wisdom in stock investing.
Right. Yeah, we love to make fun of Bitcoin. Well, maybe not us, but people do, especially on the social media. But the proof is in the pudding. And if you bought Bitcoin in 2018 or even 2019, you'd be sitting on very healthy gains versus any other asset class. So we have to leave it at that and, you know, hand it to people who did buy Bitcoin over the last couple of years. Whether that continues is, of course, another question. Stephen, what about you?
Has anybody actually done a regression on that sell in May and go away nonsense? Or is that just something from a Jesse Livermore book when he decided to go to the beach for the summer or something like that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know.
I've been hearing that for so long, and I've never actually seen someone actually produce the numbers on that, at least sometime in the last 100 years. But my favorite story was the Chicago PMI this morning. Came in at 72, maybe a little higher than 72. That's the strongest level since 1983. The prices paid index jumped 11 points in April. That's the highest to its highest level since 1980. So 1980, if you recall, we had double digit inflation. We had double digit bond yields. We very much do not have that right now. They mentioned some anecdotal evidence that businesses were over ordering because they were worried about future price increases or future shortages. To me, that's the textbook definition of inflation, despite what the Fed might say, right? Too much money chasing too few goods. I just find it And I'm not totally antithetical to what the Fed is saying, that this might be transitory, this might be supply chain issues. But to me, you can't have what we have now, which is 0% interest rates and the Fed not even thinking about hiking. Not this year, not 2022, but 2023. You can't have that with what you have now. Something's going to have to break either way. Either the Fed's going to have to tighten sooner than it needs to, or there's going to be something that's going to kind of stop the cycle of shortages and price increases that we have now.
Yeah, and for me, shifting gears significantly here, I am going to mention the NFL draft, which was held last night. A spectacle as always. They are out of Roger Goodell's basement, but they took his chair. And that was kind of a curious thing to the NFL to do, if you guys watched this. They had a fan from every team sit in this chair on the main stage when Goodell introduced that team's draft pick. Of course, Goodell was met by boos every single time, which these fans did not feel so good about when they were up there with him. But that's just what I was looking at this week. And then, of course, the New York Jets doing New York Jets things, selecting some guy from BYU, Zach Wilson, the latest next future quarterback for the New York Jets, who will probably, in all likelihood, end up just exactly like all the other ones before him, dating back to Joe Namath, at least.
Market angle on that one, Nat?
No, sorry. I guess it's just maybe just entertainment and the fact that people are still consuming it in large quantities and that the NFL continues to print money, probably more so than the other sports leagues.
I would argue the market angle there is that when the NFC does win the Super Bowl, the equities do tend to outperform. Right, and so as the AFC and the Jets continue to crumble, the odds of the AFC winning are only drop. So there you go. That's my okay. Linkage.
However, you know, Bill Belichick coming in with a value pick, drafting Mac Jones out of Alabama, which a quarterback who very surprisingly fell to him. And this could be finally the successor to Tom Brady up in New England. Anyway, none of that has anything to do with the market.
Except for here first. So there you go.
No, you didn't actually. You saw it last night first, but whatever.
We'll have a longer NFL career than Mac Jones. That's just my,
you think so?
Yeah. I don't think either of them are going to have a great career, but I think the Jets guy will be better.
Interesting. Okay. All right. We'll have to wait and see. Let's revisit that in a couple of years. Okay, with that, this concludes the podcast / videocast for today. For those of you listening to the podcast, please do check out the video, which has all kinds of cool little bells and whistles, thanks to our team of video editors who do a fantastic job. And you can get that over at seekingalpha.com/videos. It airs on Friday in time for the market close at 4 p.m. With that, we thank you for watching or listening, or perhaps both, and look forward to speaking to you again next week.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to seekingalpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.